y'all, thanks for joining us on the Cream of the Crop podcast, dedicated to agriculture. We talk to top leaders, share top ideas, and discuss top trends and products. We get to the heart of ag and put the issues on the table. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Michelle Martin, the owner of the Ag Mag and the co-owner of Farmer Who. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing really well, thanks. Trying to survive the heat, but I'm here.
How hot is it? You're in Texas, right?
Yeah, so I live at the very southern tip of Texas. I mean, you can't go any more south unless you want to go to Mexico. So it gets up to about 105, sometimes 117 on a good day.
Wow, we thought Florida was bad. Oh my goodness.
Well, Florida's pretty close. Y'all have humidity like we do, so
yes. Not fun.
We
know the struggle. Today, we obviously are featuring women in the ag industry, so obviously getting a group of women together to talk about all the different roles that we play in the ag industry. But what really caught our attention about you was that you are the owner of the Ag Mag. And we really wanted to know, what was the backstory of this? How did this get started? What was kind of like the driving force for you? So to get started, if you'll just tell us, what is the Ag Mag and how did you start it?
Sure. So I'll start off describing what the Ag Mag is. The Ag Mag is a publication, so it's a magazine, full color, and it is basically for farmers, ranchers, anyone that's involved in agriculture, whether you work at the FSA office. I mean, there's thousands of jobs in agriculture, so it's just agriculture-driven magazine. And it's there just to keep farmers and ranchers updated on new policies. It highlights kids and 4-H, FSA. I mean, anything agriculture, you name it, it's probably in that magazine. And so how it started was I was working at a job and I was extremely, extremely unhappy. I don't know if anyone out there listening has ever had a job where you don't want to go in every day. And that's where I found myself. And so I constantly prayed and prayed. And after 3 long years, one day I was sitting there at the computer and the idea just popped in my head. Hey, why don't you start a farming magazine? And I always give, you know, the praise to God, the big man upstairs, for giving me that idea. And so I called my husband, who's involved in agriculture, and I said, do they have a magazine like this? And he said, no, they used to, but they don't anymore. I said, great, they do today. And so at that moment, I walked in and quit my job with $200 in my bank account and decided to take a leap of faith. And I made a fake, or what we call a mock magazine. And I had a friend of mine who's a graphic designer named Al put that together. And my husband drove me around to all the local agricultural businesses. And I said, hey, this is my idea. Do you want to invest in it? And it kind of just took off from there.
That is so crazy to think about, that you took such a big leap of faith of leaving your job with, you said, $200 in your bank account. Like, that just blows my mind. So obviously this was something that you're super passionate about, right?
I'm extremely passionate about it. And let's just say that my husband wasn't happy. I mean, because we couldn't survive on his income alone. But I'm the type of person, I'm an only child and I grew up with a single parent. God bless my mom. She's now in heaven. But she taught me that if you're passionate about something and, you know, you believe in it, you'll make it work no matter what. And so I just had this like fire inside of me and I knew that I could make it work if I continued to push myself and to believe in myself. And it definitely was, it was a challenge, but I'm grateful I stuck with it.
I'm grateful too, because now we get to have this conversation. What did it look like? Like, I'm just trying to picture, if I was to walk away from my job today and say that I had this dream to write a magazine, what was like the first thing that you did? I mean, you said you got with some graphic design friends, but like, what is the process of even starting a magazine and getting it out to the public?
You know, I'm no professional at that. I had no really background in, you know, magazines or anything of that sort. I kind of just, I'm the type of person that when I get an idea, I don't plan out. I just go for it and deal with the hurdles as they come or the obstacles. That day that I quit my job, basically what I did is I contacted a graphic designer who I had worked with previously. And I said, this is my idea. You want, you know, a little extra cash on the side. And he's amazing at what he does. And we were friends. And so he said, sure, why not? And so he was set. And then as far as like finding content and advertisers, I sat there and made an Excel spreadsheet. And I wanted to put only advertisers who are involved in agriculture in my magazine, since it's an agricultural driven publication. And so I listed almost all the ag businesses we have in our area. And I started out just cold calling, which didn't really work out so well. And then so my husband drove me around and I walked in and I had a, you know, a sales sheet with how much an ad would cost and yada, yada. And it just kind of went from there. And the first edition, I believe I started out is 24 pages and I only had 4 or 5 advertisers. Now you fast forward, it'll be 7 years in September. I have almost 50 advertisers and it's now an 80 to 90 page magazine.
Wow. It sounds like you've definitely mastered the skill that you said that you didn't have experience in.
I always say that you learn the best through experience and through failure. So, and I mean, I had plenty of failures along the way.
What made you decide to do a magazine in ag instead of like a different type of magazine?
You know, I really can't give you a justified answer for that. I say that God gave me the idea. You know, my husband's involved in agriculture. We farm as well. And he also works for Helena Chemical. And so just being around him and going to work with him, I just saw how hard that these farmers and everyone involved in ag works. And so for me, it was kind of like a no-brainer. I mean, there's thousands of magazines out there, you know, that are fashion driven or business driven, but there's really not that much agriculture. And so I just found that niche and I went for it.
So is this a nationwide magazine? Like, where are you at?
So it could be nationwide. You can find it on the website. You know, there's a digital edition as well. I also send it out through email to over 20,000 people. But I print 10,000 hard copies, and it was really born to be just for lower South Texas. Because once you get up into Texas, there are more magazines and publications that are ag-driven, and especially nationwide, there's, you know, hundreds or thousands of them. So it was really just to highlight South Texas agriculture, because a lot of people don't realize how much ag we have down here so far south. You know, we're huge vegetable farming down here. We have over 50 vegetables, some of which some people may have never even heard of. We do a lot of exotic vegetables. And so when I started it, I really wanted to highlight South Texas. But eventually, as I've grown over the years, it's expanded to go farther and farther up Texas. And my subscription base, when I also have a mail base where I mail out the hard copies, that does go nationwide. And so on the 7th year, my goal is to include a little more national ag into my local publication.
That's so cool to think about, that something that just started as just an idea has now become across the whole country. And now you're moving into all different types of operations. What is like setting you apart from other magazines? Because I know like here in Florida, we have a few magazines that we read that are ag involved, but what's different about yours?
You know, I don't know that my magazine is much different. Definitely, I am a female, and so I think there's a little more feminine touch to my magazine, just with the colors and the graphics. My graphic designer does a great job of making sure that the pictures stand out and that it's bold. I tried to use the highest quality of paper just so people can appreciate it. I didn't want to do a newspaper type that can rip easily. I don't really know that there's anything that sets me apart aside from the fact that, you know, there's a lot of information about South Texas farming that a lot of people aren't aware of.
That's really cool that you are educating people through this too. Do you have like a team of people, or do you write all this yourself?
Well, when I first started, I obviously, it's really funny, I don't like to read, but yet I own a magazine. And I think that's due to like when I was little, you know, if you just force you to read for AR points, I don't know if they have that.
Oh my gosh, yes, the AR points.
Yes. So I grew up not liking to read, but kind of fallen into enjoying it more and more now. But I do have people write for me. And after the first magazine, I kind of got contacted through my email by some people who said, hey, you know, we really like this idea and we like this publication. Can we write for you? And so over the years, the more involved I got in the agricultural field, the more people that wanted to write for me. And there's a lot of research that is done. And so those scientists and those people who are out there doing the research, they tend to write for me. And those contacts have actually developed into friendships. And so it's been quite amazing. The most that I write is my letter from the editor. And every edition, we feature a farmer and their family and, you know, their history, because the history of a farmer or a rancher, anyone involved in agriculture, is always an interesting read.
Where do you get those contacts from? I know that just reading up about you, it says that you went to Texas A&M, I believe. Where did you find all these contacts to even get started doing something like this?
So that's a great question. I started to involve myself a lot in the agricultural world down here. And so my husband and myself sat on 10 boards that are all agricultural based. And I went out to every single field day that was here, you know, a farmer's field day with all the seed reps and all that good stuff, chemical salesmen. I would just, any event there was that was agriculture, I went to. And so I just developed contacts that way. I also brought my magazine off personally at over 400 locations. And so through doing that, I developed, you know, more friendships and more contacts, because I feel it's important that they see the face behind the product and that these people are more than just advertisers or readers. To me, that, you know, they're friendships. And so in order to maintain that, that's why I go and drop off each magazine. And through there, like I said, I've made more contacts because I sit there and I talk to people.
Are you still hand delivering magazines?
I still am to this day, 7 years later. I've had so many offers of people telling me they would do it for me, but I just politely declined because I feel it's important to maintain those relationships and those friendships. And I'm all hands on deck.
Similar here at Highland Ag, we've always been told that there needs to be a person behind the product. So when you said that, I really resonate with that. There's something special about walking into a business and handing them a service that they paid for and them seeing you and knowing you. That's something that I think a lot of people could take back to just any operation, that it's something that we could just learn in life to put a face behind it, you know?
Yes, I agree with that 100%.
What's like the most challenging part of your job? Because it sounds to me like your job is not easy. It's not just, oh, I walked into this job and I became successful. You made your own way. You literally said, I want to do this. I'm going to make it happen. What's been the hardest part?
There's two things that are challenging for me. The first one was I didn't grow up on a farm. I did have farmland, but my grandparents leased it out. And so my mother actually owned a restaurant for 27 years. And so the challenging part for me was when I started the magazine, I got a lot of, not necessarily kickback, but a lot of uncertainty because I wasn't raised in the agricultural field. So how would I know anything about agriculture? That was a struggle for me because I didn't know too terribly much. And the more I went on, the more and more I learned. And I like to think that I'm pretty well educated with it now. I did graduate from Texas A&M, but, you know, my major was completely something different. But I think that was a huge struggle. And then once, you know, the magazine was established, it became much easier. The second challenge I would say is learning how to manage my time, because when you work for yourself, you have to be very self-disciplined. I find it very difficult to work at home. And so the majority of my work is done in my vehicle, driving around, interviewing farmers, and still trying to be a mom and a wife. And I've also implemented two new projects, which is starting a TV show, which is called Ag on Wheels. And it's basically like a micro Dirty Jobs. We go out there and we educate the consumers on where their food's coming from and just how much work it takes. And then I've also started a Farmer Who project, which will have a little sticker on produce and poultry and beef and all that good stuff in the store. And you simply put your cell phone up to that sticker, and then a 1 minute video pops up with me and the farmer or rancher that grew that piece of food. And so that requires a lot of travel on my behalf, but it's just really time management. So over the years, I've really learned how to be self-disciplined and manage my time. I never 100% follow through with what my plan is, but for the majority, I do a pretty good job at it.
What you just said, I have so many questions like that, just spurred my interest on a lot of that. So on the first part where you were talking about how you didn't grow up on a farm, I certainly understand that struggle because that's the same for me. I didn't grow up on a farm and I've had to create a way for myself in the ag industry. So that's something that is to be said about you not being born into this and making your own way. I actually follow you on Instagram. So I've seen on Instagram how you are always in your car doing your videos and meeting with growers and seeing people all the time. So I definitely can tell that you are certainly working in your car a lot. What's one thing that you do to help manage your time that's like a ritual, like maybe something you do every single morning or like something every day that you're like, I have to do this to help me stay accountable?
So this may sound odd, but every morning I wake up, I am a certified personal trainer. And so I used to do it on the side for, you know, just extra cash, but exercising every morning, I have to exercise every single morning. My husband will vouch for that. And that's the time where I sit there and store everything that I need to do in my head. So that 1 hour every morning is kind of like my me time, so to say, but I'm still working because I'm thinking in my head, okay, this is what I need to do today. And that's just my time to map everything out. So as soon as I'm done working out, I go get a piece of paper. I write out my plan. I don't necessarily put timestamps on everything because I know that'll never work. So I just make a list for myself. Then as soon as everything's done, you know, I check it off because as you know, very well know, social media is extremely important in today's society. It's, you know, for getting the word out there. And so that's always number one. And then once that's you know, the Instagram and Facebook post is done, then we move on to the next, which would be magazine. And so I just try to categorize it, but I plan everything out every morning on a workout.
You're doing a lot better than me because I do not work out every morning. So you're challenging me there.
I have to, or I wouldn't be a nice person. I promise you.
You talked about your TV show, Ag on Wheels, and that's awesome. But what really, really interests me when you just were talking was Farmer Who. Tell me more about that, because I really hear in the industry a lot of talk about labels and a lot of talk about connecting producers to consumers. So tell me like what that is, what that looks like.
So Farmer Who was actually kind of like an idea that came out of nowhere. My TV show was very expensive and it wasn't on at the best time here locally on our ABC channel. So I got myself into a little bit of a financial distress because I was ending up having to pay for almost the entire thing because, as you very well know, people are into streaming these days or into YouTube. So commercials are really a thing of the past also because of DVR. So I was having a lot of trouble getting sponsors for the show. So I spent nearly $30,000 of my own money, aside from Texas Farm Credit, who advertised, and a couple other people. So I got myself in so much financial distress that there's a good friend of mine who owns a business called Frontera Produce. And his name is Will Steele. And then his president is Amy Gates. And then the vice president, Misty Yossi, I went in there and I was basically had to put my pride aside. And I said, look, guys, this is the predicament I'm in. Y'all are great business people. What do you think that I should do? Should I stop the show or do I continue going? You know, what do I need to do? And that's kind of how Farmer Who came to be. They kind of said, hey, let's put the show on pause for a second. And what if we did this? And then all four of us kind of came together and developed Farmer Who. And Farmer Who is there to educate the consumer on where their food is coming from. In today's society, agriculture is faced with a lot of negativity. People think that everyone's using GMOs or they're spraying bad things. And is this safe to eat? So Farmer Who is a product that is allowing the consumer to know exactly where their food came from what location, and the farmer that grew it. So for example, we have a farm down here that does watermelons, and we started off with watermelons as our soft launch. We'll eventually do all types of produce and meat and poultry, but it's just a sticker that says Farmer Who, and it has a QR code on it. Now, most times when people see a QR code, they're a little pushed back because they don't want to have to download an app and all that good stuff. Here, you don't have to download an app. All you do is just put your camera up to that QR code, and then a video automatically will pop on your phone. You don't have to press any buttons, and it's just a one-minute video with that farmer. They just flew me to Arizona to do, you know, some watermelons over there. So this allows the consumer to be educated on how and where their food was grown. And it's very simple. There is no steps except from that camera up to that sticker.
That actually like makes me giddy inside because I think that's something that's so simple and practical that a lot of companies could implement that we just almost just miss over. Like, why is it so difficult to get that done?
The majority of the time, I don't want to just single out, you know, the women, but you see a lot of women in grocery stores and they want to know that what they're feeding their child is safe. And I think that if there's a lot of people who are miseducated on whether something's organic or not organic or GMO or non-GMO, and a lot of larger companies use that GMO and organic for their benefit when, you know, let's say, for instance, there's a box that says non-GMO. Well, that product is non-GMO regardless. So these companies find loopholes to try to get their products sold, but at the same time, it's kind of misinforming the consumer. And so let's say that a mom's in the grocery store and she's like, well, man, I want to know if this apple is safe to give my child. Well, then all they'll have to do is put that camera up to the sticker and, oh, well, my apple was grown in, you know, such and such place and with this farmer. And so it just gives a sense of security and it's more of a safety for them to know that it's okay. Because what farmers feed their families, you know, they're also feeding yours. So they're not going to feed something to your family that they wouldn't give to themselves.
Yeah. And I think too, being vulnerable, like those growers are being vulnerable by saying, this is me, this is my operation, this is my family, and we are providing this food for you and it's safe. And we want you to understand that there is, again, a face behind the name of that product. How do growers or farmers, ranchers, however, get involved in something like a Farmer Who label? Like, what do they do to get in contact to get something like that on their product?
So they would just go to farmerwho.com. And on there, there's a, you know, a tab that says contact us, and they just fill it out, and then they would get a phone call, and they just do an over-the-phone interview, kind of like, what are you looking for? You know, do you want to show your sustainability? And then it kind of just progresses from there. It's really easy if you did decide to go through with it. Me and the crew comes out and we just film the 1 minute video, give them tons of pictures to have. And, you know, we just go on from there and we kind of just work with the farmer to be able to showcase them, their story and their sustainability. So it just starts with an easy filling out a form online and then a phone call.
And so this is just watermelons, you said, right now.
Actually, we're going to start doing onions at the, well, in my area, onions are already done. We're always ahead of schedule where I live down here because we plant and harvest year round. We have over 50 vegetables, not us personally, but the area. And so we're year round, but we're actually going to do onions, pecans, honey, all that's already lined up. And so we're going with anything. So anyone who farms whatever, you know, we're willing to make that phone call and see what we can do to help.
And is there a cost to this?
There is a cost for it, but that's something that is discussed once that phone call is made because we find out the vision, we find out everything that the, you know, the farmer, the grower, the shipper, retailer, whoever, because anyone can qualify for this. And so it's just we find out what their needs are and then we go based upon that.
So what's something that a consumer could do to spread the word of what farmers are doing on their farm? Like what's something simple that you could share with consumers to help the cause that you're actually already doing through Farmer Who, but on a consumer base?
I think that consumers just need to, you know, especially if they're on the fence, just to do your research. And there's a lot of miseducation out there on the internet. So don't, as a consumer, don't just rely on Google or what you read on Facebook or what you read on, you know, Google or the internet. It's really important to reach out to a local farmer, you know, ask them, go to someone who's involved in agriculture and ask. Because on the internet, anyone can put anything on there. And so I think going to the source is a major thing that can help. And I also think that consumers need to realize that these farmers put their blood, their sweat, and their tears into their job, just like everyone else, you know, mostly does in their job. Not everyone, but the majority of people. And farmers aren't going to feed something to you that they're not going to feed to their family, you know? And so safety is a big thing. And I think farmers are really trying to let people know that their hard work is safe. You know, there's just, I don't know how to really put that into words, but there's just so much misconception. And so I think just going to the source and, you know, asking a local farmer or rancher, I think that's a better answer than Google.
For sure. I think that's some practical advice too. Well, it certainly sounds like Farmer Who and the AgMag are going big places and they're moving rapidly. You've probably gotten to talk to several different growers and farmers and ranchers. Could you think of one that was maybe like your favorite story that you got to share?
You know, someone asked me this on another podcast and my favorite. I think that every single person brings a unique story. One that I think really, really stands out to me that just my heart was so warm was have you ever heard of Kobe beef, or it's called Akaushi beef?
Mm-hmm.
It's a certain breed. And so I went out to their ranch and their story is just, I mean, it's so heartfelt. They have three children and one passed away at the age of three. They built a memorial for him. And every day there's a red cardinal that comes and visits the family. And they say, I think that a cardinal is when a loved one is coming to visit you. And so every day that red cardinal comes to that little memorial center and sits on his little grave site. And the way that they just developed their business from nothing to this production now is insane. I mean, they have all the cattle. Just the process to even be considered an Akaushi, you know, breed of cattle is amazing. And the fact that they just continued to strive through and, you know, despite all the hardships and build this empire that they have now, it was just so heartfelt. And I actually did a TV episode on it. That probably would be one of my favorite episodes because everyone has turmoil in their life and everyone has difficulties. And just to hear someone push through and prevail, I'll never forget it.
That's awesome. And I feel like I'm seeing that in your story of how you pushed through and prevailed and made a way for yourself and your family, even when it seemed like you had to stay at this job that you didn't like. So it's super inspiring for me. And I'm ending every episode the same way by asking each woman, what is one piece of advice you would give to a woman that could potentially be wanting to start a business or has an idea that's in the ag industry? What's one piece of advice for them?
The one thing that I would say is pray about it, pursue it if you love it and your dreams will come true. But at the same time, buy yourself a helmet because life is tough And agriculture is not an easy place, regardless of what people may say. Agriculture is tough and it takes a special kind of person. So have tough skin, but a soft heart at the same time. And just keep your eyes on the prize. I've said this in several other podcasts as well. You know, everyone has a different story and everyone's handed a different deck of cards in life. Not the deck of cards that you're given, but it's how you play them. So play smart, play fair, and remember to keep your eye on the true prize. And that's just educating and believing in what you do.
My favorite part you said was to have thick skin and a soft heart. I think that's awesome. So thank you so much for taking some time to just talk to us, for us to get to know you a little bit better, and just to hear about your successful businesses that you're starting. You're really a champion in the industry for sure.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
We will talk to you soon. Thanks again, Michelle. Thank you for joining us today. This podcast has been a presentation of Haz Media, copyright 2020, all rights reserved. Be sure to follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook at Highland Ag Solutions.